I'd like to welcome all of you to this part of today's Yom HaYom, sponsored by Yeshivat Har Etzion in honor of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, marking the beginning of Rav Aaron's fourth decade as Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion. My name is Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter. I'm the dean of the Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik Institute in Boston. And it is my great honor to spend the next somewhat a little bit over an hour in public conversation with Rav Lichtenstein on issues that relate to himself and on issues that relate Dvarim Ha'omdim Berumo Shel Olam in Eretz Israel, in Medinat Israel, and throughout the Jewish world. I want to first thank David Landis, David Plato, Asaf Bednarsh, Perry Petsky, Ronnie Ziegler, and some others for all the work that they did and the input they had in preparing this session. I also want to take this opportunity at the outset to express publicly my own personal hakaras hatov to Rav Lichtenstein. I've never had the privilege of being a formal Talmud of his, but I consider myself a Talmud nevertheless. A Talmud of his Torah Sheba'al Peh, all the opportunities that I had and sought eagerly to hear him in all of the different formats that were available to me, and even more so, his extensive and growing Torah Sheba'al Peh, which I continue to read with great interest and to great benefit. In addition, a more direct personal hakaras hatov, over the years as a rabbi, I have turned to Rav Lichtenstein on a number of occasions with some of my most difficult challenges, both in the areas of tzach as well as in the areas of practical policy. In spite of his very busy schedule, in spite of the fact that I was not a formal Talmud, he was extraordinarily gracious to me with his time and with his wisdom, and for this I am extremely grateful. I'd like to begin, Rav Lichtenstein, with today and with this week. On Wednesday night, the yeshiva honored you at the annual dinner here in New York. The yeshiva gave you a Sefer Torah. Unfortunately, I was not present at the dinner. I understand that it was a very moving moment and a series of moments for you. You danced with the Sefer Torah for some 30 minutes. And today, the Yom HaYom, in your honor, in the presence of most of your children, in the presence of many Talmidim, in the presence of many whose lives you have impacted in very profound ways. Not only those who are present here, but those who will have access to the videotape of our conversation. Could you share with us a little bit about what you're feeling today and what you've been feeling this week in light of this very special occasion in your life?
Sure, what I'm feeling these days is what has been given to every Jew and to Israel feels and what people need to be feeling here. And this is whatever we're celebrating, whatever the high moments, something very high. But it's a little bit of anxiety, which I realize that we do, that we are. And that is something which I speak normatively, but also feel I don't see how to be otherwise. So that's the context, an unfortunate context, for what ought to have been and what we are, very high moments. That's why I feel obviously deeply gratified and at the same time deeply humble. The gratification is to a great extent just to Ben Shleiman for having brought me out alone. The previous occasion I once expressed the thought that the time that I was born in Paris, published in 1933, one these things with sacred odds, and what are the chances, of course, in my life to develop as it has, you know, the zikr through Mabit's favor, Mabit's favor of Israel, in the way that I have, I think the odds would have been very, very slight to be that way. That developed, I'm not a shepherd for how you go at one point, first of all, I should have been a shleva. After that, in many, I probably should have been as well. It would have been so central in my life, giving its purpose and direction. Its focus is particularly in this context, of course, by Kavim. The guy Kavim is the one who's both gratified and humble. Life of the Kino is one which has great deal of frustration. Some on a day-to-day basis, some on a month-to-month basis. And it's a great challenge. Particularly so, of course, is one on one hand, in one sense, it's right from old family. On the other hand, one doesn't want to be brought in simply so much clay in the father's hand. And the result is that very often, through disappointment, but at the same time, great deal of exhilaration. I encourage people to go to Kinnuk, I tell them that God knows about it. And it isn't. And it's moments such as this which gives you a sense of cumulative gratification and accomplishment, which one gets at various occasions and in many contexts, particularly when it comes over, you see someone grow and develop. The source of enormous satisfaction, so it goes in the fallen. But it also funnels and comes together and shatters. And here, obviously, that is very moving and particular. You mentioned in that the Secretaria, that was not just a moving moment in the sense of what's happening. There are things which one aspires and hopes the world of relationship. But the sense that I would own a sacred prayer, or I achieve a piece of the street I raised personally, is beyond my reach. I know of individuals, one of them I believe many of them had about the rich or any of them had one, but it always didn't seem somehow less than God. Maybe all of a sudden the warmth and the generosity of so many made it possible. And there, the book is substantial element of the independent of each year. And these two which have been special, I've said so much in this book. Say in another respect, what is humble, because I said to me on occasion, of course, of Dillard, Myron, Sacred, and enough, I better have made good if I made the new one. And I say that with any false modesty. People turn above and bust me. And feel one hand and have the responsibility. And on the other hand, the sense that maybe there's appreciation, I need to be aware of that to many people. But be humbled by the responsibility, and the sense that they deserve, we deserve better, even as they try their best to be what they need. There's a kind of disconcerting. Is the occasion is a community like called press conference. And Gurus had it once a month, I'm sure it's so often. And there you are sitting and call reading about full coverage in his old age, known as the stage of hiking, set in his house of high day, people telling him hunting for wisdom. And so this concerning that people come and ask questions, but if I know all the answers. One of the answers, I mentioned this earlier meeting with a group of students of YU, one of the answers is, in part of the Nevi Hashem, and certainly in the modern context, not necessarily know all the answers, but know what to do with the questions. Some of the familiar people, you know all the answers. And then I feel maybe I'm a little dishonest. One of the things I got from my parents and my rabbi, desire to be honest. You ask how I feel now, I guess, the last 2 days, been very powerful. But other things is to meet the pressure chamber, get back to proper proportion, proper perspective. And I guess the good deal of what it's been for us today is we come back. We're not a poet, it's very fond of wordless Christian poetry, the most recollection is tranquility. And may the relation is the tranquility of the image of every collection.
I feel a little bit guilty because I feel like I am engaging in a press conference right now. So I hope you'll be more for me and be more for those who are responsible for putting you in this situation.
As long as they know the ground rules are honest.
That's very important and much appreciated. I want to begin where you began and get next to the previous question. You talked about, and I quote you now, the element of anxiety, which serves as a context for all of your feelings now, specifically in light of what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. And Yom Ha'atzmaut and Tochen Mim Zayin, 1997, delivered a sikha in the yeshiva, assessing the first half century of the existence of Mitzvah Yisrael, in the context of the halakhic framework of yoga. At that time, the state ritual was beginning in the 50th year. You quoted a pasuk in Shmos, dealing with events leading up to Yetzias Mitzrayim, actually to Matan Torah, Bimshoch HaYovel, Hema Yadavar. Rashi says, Bimshoch HaYovel, Yovel, Shoch HaShavar. We make the following statement. I only have it here in the English translation of an adaptation of the Sikha, but I'm proceeding under the assumption that it's a correct rendition, an accurate rendition. Those who were opposed to Zionism knew that at Sinai, from Shofar Yovel, Hema Yadavar. It is only when the shofar blast is sounded in the world by the Messiah that they will ascend the mountain, that the Jews will retake the land. But the entire thrust of Zionism in all its forms, and most certainly of religious Zionism, is exactly the opposite. Only to the extent that there is a willingness to self-sacrifice in order to ascend the mountain, will the blast of the Yovel, the shofar, be heard. The Yovel, the shofar blast of Mashiach, does not come of its own accord. It requires effort, communal and national devotion, and personal self-sacrifice. Effort, communal and national devotion, and personal self-sacrifice. You live in Yerushalayim, and you travel every day, virtually every day on the road from Yerushalayim to Gush Etzion. What thoughts have been going through your mind on that ride in these last months and weeks in the context of what you describe as the effort, communal and national devotion, and personal self-sacrifice?
Here's the guy's mission for the limit. Clearly, I don't regard myself as a great hero, so I did the best. I had familia, who are sitting in trenches in various parts of the country, whose lives are on the line, and they have lined up, and my own is not. And I want to speak first as a sacrifice within the context of a security situation. It's to those familia, and to all the soldiers who are in the army, or to be Tashri, who are in a far more dangerous situation than we are. Now, I will say that as far as the central pieces which you alluded, namely the need for effort and the readiness to exert oneself, a theme which, of course, Rabbi spoke before in the law, but not too much of stress, that both within the standard thought in general, that is. My own small way, I think, the presence there, determination, even when in objective terms something doesn't make sense. Last Friday I went to the yeshiva, and I couldn't go very long before I could come back and marvel out of the other things. And I asked myself, where am I going? I'm going to go down there. I'm not saying yeshiva, it's close my house. Will my parents do that much of business to them? No. And yet, I thought it's very important, number one, to maintain through the series of the course of within this context. Number two, to give a sense, to communicate to Talmidim, they shouldn't think, because unfortunately, they should get the previous day covered as before, and that all of a sudden was getting cold. But I say again, I'm the last person in the world who invited himself to be a hero. A person who's intent, who's bent, determined, within common effort, and in areas in which, and not the least, this is peculiar, but in areas in which I am qualified to be more involved in a personal way, personally so. I think certainly that we need both in the short term and the long term. In short, I yoga, the idea that you have a heart to the extent that we are quite involved in worship of yoga. But I certainly don't want to exaggerate my own involvement.
Let me ask you something on a broader level, not necessarily specifically related to the current matter. There are those who speak now about the whole notion called post-Zionism. What does Zionism mean in a context, especially within Israel, when people think that we're already living after Zionism? At one point, the Zionism part of religious Zionism was very much in sync with the broad spectrum of contemporary Israeli society. It was something that brought the religious Zionist community together with and had in common with the broad masses of general, not necessarily religious Zionist Israeli society. But now it seems to some that the emphasis on Zionism is alienating religious Zionism from perhaps the mainstream or large numbers of those who don't share the basic fundamental assumptions. For people who are concerned about maintaining a fealty to Zionism, as well as simultaneously having a connection, a profound and deep connection with broader elements of Israeli society, how do you go about trying to accomplish that in today's world, in today's time?
First, let me say, I don't think that fundamentally the future of Zionism has changed because many people have abandoned it. It's unfortunate they've abandoned it, but I don't think it's fundamental tenets, both thinking of Zionism generally and the religious Zionism particularly, I don't think that that is fundamentally changed. The basic tenets, those which characterize religious Zionism, distinguish it from secular Zionism on one hand, or from non-anti-Zionism in the religious world on the other hand, those fundamentally remain the same. In recognition of the point was made previously, namely that we need to do an active involvement, engagement in the process of history that the way passively, that in doing we need to be ready to work shoulder to shoulder with broader segments of Klal Yisrael, not only Jewish Romania, Shemitah, or Mitzvah. A recognition of the value, not to be exaggerated, but the value of elements which narrowly considered and specifically defined are not spiritual in nature, but the geophysical, holding the land, the people, etc. Acknowledge the importance of that, some people do not. These are some of the solution factors. And of course, the commitment within the context of religious Zionism, the commitment to all of this is part of the Avodas Hashem personally and nationally considered. There is truth in what you say that some elements of religious Zionism today serve not to weld and to melt, but to divide into something. There was a time when Dao took that to be representative political arm of religious Zionism. It was regarded as a gesture and a gesture, which was the right and the left, which was the coup and the Maharaj. Today, it was long abandoned after all, it was the right of that from my point of view, if you don't mind using this politically, is unfortunate. It's unfortunate politically because we're on the wrong track. It's unfortunate politically sociologically because it has to a great extent marginalized the community of religious Zionists. But I think we have to extrapolate the purely political front to the broader sociological front. In many respects, I think that German Jewish religious Zionists are more engaged, more woven into the fabric of the country as a whole. They're more involved with industry, they're more involved with commerce than they were a generation ago. And I also think that you have to differentiate between various strains in the religious Zionism when you're dealing with what brings them together, brings them apart, the general culture. There's one issue, and that is the issue of Yeshayahu, Shachrim, so to speak, etc. There indeed, the bulk of Anshei Shlomim, including the people with whom I work, amongst which I live, maintain views which not only are not in line with what most of the country holds, but with many people in the rest of the country and after them, because both here they've got to make sacrifices in order to realize the dreams of the dictatorial and religious fanatics. And that is a specific issue. And other issues where there have been some drifting apart are not on Lewis. Many of the people today, the spirit of America, have moved away from the mainstream of Jewish society in a cultural sense, quite irrespective even of the whole issue of political future and growth of the United States and tomorrow, still there was a chasm between what is it, the atmosphere and other areas, the actual would be considerably greater than it was. Now some of that is due to the intensification of a powerful religious life. And in some circles of not doubtful or often good. But some of it is due to polarization and solidarity, some of which you see in this country as well, and that is not so positive. As far as what needs to be done, well, here I find myself in some other issues trying to pull in some different directions, but the diverse directions, at the same time. Intensification of the quality of religious life within the Philomene community, however, in this respect, we have very much, to live in the Karen community, the kind of people they give and the work they put in some sacrifice in these areas. But what we don't want to learn from them, and don't want to learn from ourselves, is the elements of righteousness and closing our own ranks. We need to be able to work at the same time to develop greater love for favorite values in a narrow sense and greater love for others in a broader sense. I once spoke to Rabbi some years ago, mid-80s, about the difficulty of doing this because, on one hand, to inculcate love for favorite, so you have to inculcate love, which might tend to be exclusive to people who are the givers and advocates. Same time, you want to dictate others to Israel, which says that there's an important value. This is an educational challenge. It's easy to educate people to others to say that I was a sinner to Israel, but a distance from Israel. And it's easy to educate others to Israel when you, in fact, have abandoned all the specific values which are endemic to the world we live in. I'm not willing to go either, but therefore I've had an educational effort.
Is the state of Israel, which you think that will represent? What does that mean?
It's a universe. Yes, that's what it means. I don't know what it is. I know there was a great deal of debate about this issue. My mind is absolutely meaningless. It all depends what you mean by that term. If people, instead of just because we were taking them, mean what some people try to do me, that Yom HaKadosh, what is Yom HaKadosh? My conception of what Gula is all about, that's simply some kind of geophysical or political redemption, or spiritual redemption. If I look around me, we are quite a distance from that. So anybody who thinks that this Gula comes and descends to the Neshamayim, someone under the white horse, white ass, and Bakasha. But if we start talking about the more natural course, that is, as I mentioned before, that I've been brought up out of the life of the world, then from there we're still in the abyss. If the person is a more modest conception, and so she can't do what I tell you, in the early stage of the beginning of some recipient movement, and as a result, things to be ought to celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut, and ought to relate the development of the state as a significance step forward, possibly the watershed, history of Bani Israel, that is certainly believed. But we have a long way to go to Gula, to that as well. So before Pesach now, many, many years ago, I spoke to Yeshiva and another occasion elsewhere, and we had two Mitzvot Alokeses. Mitzvot Alokeses is a dual character. On one hand, it's one Mitzvah, one Mitzvah Rabbah. The other hand, the Gemara says, and the Eid defies the halacha, which makes the Sabbath of the Kabbalah for each case, the Shabbat of the Chodah Nisir of the Atzma. And the point that I made then was that there's some people who feel that one case and they have it all, only the others. And others who feel that don't have all four, you have nothing. I think our world needs to be built on the dual vision. The ultimate process is our Rishon Shnei Gula. Until we attain that, all we have is a Rishon Shnei Gula. The Ma'ich Levi Kodos has enormous significance in its own right. There was, we know, after Oslo particularly, people who initially signed much more weight to Shishim Kadur than I had, and were therefore definitely disappointed. And the same is already in the Prophet, the leading spokesman of the world in our class. He said, if this is what the state is like, it's not the Shin Tzimikat, it's not the Ula Pei, then it gave them a dinner again. He gave this particular meaning and interpretation of it. I had a lot of lower expectations to begin with, and therefore, quite apart, assuming they held his political views. But did not feel the same sense of disappointment. There are things that we're very disappointed about this world today, but don't think that we need to build up expectations to a point where the bar is so high that if you don't pass it, then you fail and don't strike this phrase up. I retain the phrase, but give it modest scope.
I want to move from Medinet Israel to the role of the day after today. November 1st, 1982, you delivered a lecture at the Study Circle on World Jewry under the auspices of the President of the State of Israel. The Hebrew text was published in 1984 and was followed by the publication of the translation. And you said then as follows, the relation of Orthodoxy to Zionism is further influenced by growing acculturation within the diaspora and the deepening kinship with the country of exile. Unlike its predecessors, the current Orthodox generation is no stranger to the American scene. The sense of alienation at times of inferiority and subliminal shame, which often mark the older members of the Agudat HaRabbanim, is foreign to their heirs and is established for the Agudat HaRabbanim. Consequently, as they feel more at home in their diaspora habitat, Orthodox Jews are naturally less inclined to flock to Zionism, by way of solving the presumed approach of the problem. Moreover, within Orthodoxy, one encounters a particular concern with the problem which confronts the Jewish community as a whole. Increasing competition between commitment to the needs of local institutions and readiness to work and contribute on behalf of Israel and its enterprises. The phenomenon is especially acute in the Orthodox world because its needs are greater and possibly somewhat added its capacity to eliminate participation in pastors on the vote, organized a great deal of the Orthodox Jewish diaspora. Does the diaspora have a role today? Should communal funds and human resources be invested in strengthening diaspora institutions? If that's the case, what can be done to address the concern that you reflected in 1982 in terms of the relationship between the diaspora and the centrality of state education?
Just listen, my research has been done, and I'll be stupid. I listen to 10% more than I have.
That's why I read the whole thing to remind you.
It brought you a better
memory. I don't understand the question I've asked you.
Anyone questions whether there's a role for the Aspen Jewry, whether there's institutions, it's yeshivas, it's the Knesset, it's Yehudis Masonim, it's infrastructure, religious, social, cultural, that should be supported. They don't want to envision for a moment that all of that can be wiped out and survive. There may be discussions about the priorities. And as we well know, and here I stand, the institution of the Israelis needs to be funded. But there are discussions in all kinds of fora, in all kinds of contexts, how the breakdown should be. And as a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, I'm going to Allah, between the subset of the Kasashulchan, only Peter's marks took into place, Kasashul. But the two priorities that you find in Allah, that is what one is a Yilcha, local community precedes other community. The other one, the Eretz Yisrael, they take precedence over other men. What happens if you have an option between the Eretz Yisrael and the Yilcha? This is not discussed in the Gemara, but that's why I'm not discussed in the Shemir. It is discussed in the Pasa Shulcha, who says that the Eretz Yisrael came in. And the Sefer, if I remember correctly, says that the Yilcha came. So we've got the priorities for the discussions, and I presume the answer is certainly not going to be Kula Shaliyah, Kula Shaliyah. How is this question proportioned? But of the importance, there are millions of Jews out there, and you will out there. Their spiritual needs, their physical needs, their social needs, and these need to be addressed and these need to be ministered to. I think the responsibility to be concerned with that, I would say, is not only a responsibility to ask for the community, but we in our society, as people collectively, feel that as well. I think as a Jew in our society, sensitive, and as a Zionist, he does not recognize the responsibility he has to the Golana. It's not a family, but also there's a responsibility to itself. And that responsibility is multiple. It is in part at the personal plane. Each individual, every individual Jewish child, Jewish family, Jewish community, as it seems, these need to be addressed. And then there is a kind of collective responsibility to the Gola as part of policy, as part of Western Israel. For certain purposes, halakhic and other, this too has been fleshed out in many contexts. Community in Eretz Yisrael is a kind of self-contained union for certain purposes. The Baal Hamedrash, Hanukkah to call, Hanukkah to call, the term call in its quintessential sense, it means community. That the article applies to those who resonate with Eretz Yisrael. And this relates to the Rosh Hashanah mission today this year. But for other purposes, Knesset Yisrael is an organic entity which transcends the bounds of time and place, is an organic historical community in the past, the future, the present, and of course, the needs of that community are very much should be in the thoughts of every responsible Jew when he lives in Knesset Yisrael or on the Golan.
So just to follow up to try to defend why I asked the question. So halakha l'maaseh, if somebody was to ask you, I have X number of dollars, and I'm interested in using this for an appropriate shelter, and I have my local shul, my local yeshiva, I'm living in America, and I have yeshiva, how it's going, or any other religious for education in Israel. What criteria go into deciding that child is passing the
test? The Talmud in here, mine, they know it. That's like if you have two interrogators. Maybe that's the criteria you're talking about. The first answer probably given was, then the subject in Shiva to the local school, you try to study Indian education and both of these. That's part of it. The variables which have to do with what extent the respective institutions or communities are in need, and to what extent to judge with some objective yardstick those needs are important. I think the Balatani correctly says, and then some of the local people, and the Rabban and the Hor and the Dovim, doesn't mean that if you're looking to buy for a coat, someone else is starving, so then there has to be some qualitative balance and resemblance between respective needs. And that, of course, needs to be weighed. The city, how important the need is, that may have been important subject to lead to the life of a particular person, a particular family, or it may be the need from an objective standpoint, the life of Jewish history and Jewish values, and what we view as being central, what is relatively speaking marginal, peripheral, what is one element stand, as opposed to the other. Having said all that, though, I think the answer is, my answer would probably not be, give the whole bundle here and the whole bundle there. Father Talib, claim is there, is not coming to the deck. Then, see how much you give here. Now, there's another variable which always enters the question of these kind of priorities, and this is the extra associated with the very serious, we have to determine whether, if you're confronted with a conflict, as between Talmud Torah and doing the mitzvah, or the area to with Abayi in a certain respect. The question is, the extent to which the need to be met by others always becomes a factor. I say a factor only in a limited sense, because there are certain areas to say, well, it's important to do this because the need needs to be met. And as long as the need is met, fine. The other areas where we say it's not just a need that needs to be met. You have to do it. You speak of Minas Chasodim, so even all the needs of the indigent, etc., could be met in some other way. If you are then going to be left as a person who's not a Minas Chasodim, that is an inferior spiritual life, a religious life, an inferior religious life on your part. Even if that person would be ministered to by other people. So I don't say that the minute something actually got paid, so you can phase yourself out and show them a match. But that certainly is a factor to be considered. And some areas of philanthropy, for instance. How important is it to build up the Jewish hospitals, let us say? Critical of these building issues. If the case were, maybe that's not the case, I don't know the facts that well, but if the case were that fundamentally hospital needs could be met by the broader community, by government funds, and issues could not, so that should be effectively weighed as well. So that too needs to be part of it.
Jewish history has presented Klal Yisrael with very difficult challenges, culminating, of course, with the Holocaust. Our goal, these hundreds and hundreds of years, has been a very long one and a very weighty one. Obviously, we need to encourage Klal Yisrael to continue to maintain commitment to Halakha, Mumma, and Zohar. It requires also developing a thick skin very often. Is there some transcendental inspirational message to inspire Jews to remain committed in the long term to our Masorah, to Jewish destiny, in spite of full of tremendous challenge that we had at people in the last many years.
As the temple was going to be far, most of us had to do such a city for months. Well, first of all, I'm going to speak only of having a thick skin. That sounds very, very limited, you know, it's a rhinoceros, a hippopotamus, the ability to be sheer survival. We are looking for much more than sheer survival. And I would say beyond that, in order to survive, we need to want much more than sheer survival. I think it would be very difficult for an individual view of a good family, or Jewish community, that is wholly bent and is fully content simply to survive, it would be good for them to survive, to do even that. Because you're dealing with Klal Yisrael as a fundamental spiritual community, and in order for it to survive in a meaningful way, something of the spirit that survived within. So we have our Tachah, the very Shoyal, that will survive. But our Tachah is certainly quite grounded. Another Tachah, that the spirit will survive. It's a Shoyal to Kuzada. Then it's reborn in heart. You ask, is there something to which one can appeal? I presume there are. But some of those appeals are generic and something more specific. Spoken for transcendent. Obviously, one of the things to which we want to appeal, this is a broad, universal kind of appeal, is to try to encourage people to transcend themselves, to be less individualistic, less egocentric. To think in terms of deeper roots, broader values, let the reach extend beyond where they're standing present. And this is the area with about which, unfortunately, the United States soil, as I believe there is in this country as well, we've seen a decline. Our country, the United States soil, was more idealistic 30 years ago, 50 years ago. Less so today, there's more communism, more orientation than we have. You see, people are trying to build their profession, to build their vocations, to build their education, etc. And so we need to be able to develop in people the capacity for transcending themselves. Now, the question, of course, is how do you do that? So I guess there are two avenues. One avenue is, try to inculcate that as a value per se, even if you speak so abstract. So inculcate patriotism is a value. It's not just a scoundrel, it's something to value. Take one example. Communicate that sense. And as part of moral education, it's part of personal education. But, of course, we don't want to depend on the generic. Even if this is Jewish perspective, and Yahadus is built on a kind of dialectic between universalism and particularism. On one hand, there are certain broad general values which we would want to address to the world as a whole, and which are part of our patrimony on one hand, but part of what we contribute, what we think to the world. On the other hand, we have a very specific and some would say parochial set of concerns, and we don't want to just inculcate patriotism in general. We want to be able to inculcate patriotism and loyalty and relation to the Jewish world, Jewish perspective. To that end, we need, yes, have an appeal, condition, like the halacha, but probably not only that, probably something in the sense of the meaning, the historical, the mega-historical terms of each existence, a sharper sense of where we've been, a sharper sense of where we're headed, in particularistic terms. That includes the life of halacha, but I can envision a person leading the life of halacha he's very deficient in terms of his sense of what Israel is all about. I hope that doesn't happen too often, but it can happen, and some still it does happen. And part of what we need to get across is the ability to open people's hearts to certain messages, and then to give messages. The problem is that very often, the key to opening the heart to let the message come in is the message itself, and then the question is where is it being spoken, the change starts to begin.
You've written extensively in a number of essays in Hebrew and English about, and I'm quoting now from one that I'm most familiar with in the book, Religion and Conflict with Other Cultures, Rejection or Integration, about the considerable spiritual significance of general culture. I don't want to talk about and ask you to reflect upon the conceptual ideology of Torah Mazda or Torah Chokhmah. You hear that that's from the last tradition and footnote of that essay. But I want to ask you if you could reflect on the community that's most associated with that ideology, which has different names, the Modern Orthodox community, the Central Orthodox community. And he tested for a kind color, the Rosh Hashal had some harsh words for this community. And I'm quoting from the Rosh Hashal. As long as Rakhine is talking about Rakhine color of the river, there existed a strong tie between us and earlier generations. When he went away, the knot was undone. When I visited him at home, in a particular neighborhood in Manhattan, with which I'm very familiar, but which will at this moment be known and stated, I believe that the time was in the West 90s in Manhattan. When I visited him at home, with its bustling, hollow Jewish life, with its synagogues, societies, clubs, and various leaders, I always felt that I was entering another world, as if I had breached some border separating two realms of being, the domain of early generations, the shaft of Hazra Zohar, and that of modern orthodoxy with its snip wings and ruthlessness, unable to fathom the depth of religious experience. What do you see as some of the shortcomings of this community, some of the challenges facing specifically this community? What practical suggestions do you have to raise the level of the Mechazer of this community? And do you see a difference between America and Israel in terms of the orientation, challenges, and ways to elevate this particular community?
I'm familiar with that passage, and I've had occasion to reflect upon it and certain sort of discussion as well. It's a harsh passage. I think to some extent it's a little bit unfair. Compare any community that has a shot at a thousand years ago, that is to set such a high standard. If one had picked many other places, many other epochs in Jewish history, I think the West Side would have got up a little bit better than that particular one. But having said that, if I have another point, I think that in certain respects, the situation today is better than it was when the Rebbe Shlomo Zalman climbed up. My mother was lived 42 years ago. Maybe 42 years is ever present. And I think that if you consider the state of the committed community, I'm not talking now about the margin group. It's happened, you well know, by and large, in America, in England, and now it's spread all over. The thing this community is that it has contracted and constricted, but at the core, it is more intense, more vibrant Jewish living, halakhic living, and general. You can see this almost wherever you go, and not much in statistics of enrollment in day schools. But by and large, in terms of, just go up to YU, it goes down over there, and several go to Hebrew Shannon, other camps, and so whatever it is. There's more rabbit today's difference. I think there's this on the test. There are some advance in prayer, I think some advance in spirit as well. Somebody was shocked a year or two ago and heard that I had spoken phrase of quote unquote spirituality, Dhamma spirituality. And then listened to this, I said yes. People Dhamma today, Dhamma is about 10 years ago. When that was done at the Lord, that was not the point. There's this sort of thing. There are major, major shortcomings. And part of it has to do with superficiality. And one kid who wants to speak and say there are two kinds of shortcomings in the one child, there are two kinds of superficiality. There are shortcomings which are the flip side of the strengths. If you want that bread, so at some point you've got to pay the price. So at some point, you're going to pay the price for some sort of debt. But then there are shortcomings which are simply that as such. And we've got superficiality is again. You want to relate to other needs and certain other values. And relate to them not because they're indolent and not because they're selfish. I mean, you think that within your hashkafa, which is part of Zumini Maratha's hashkafa is all about, within your hashkafa, the balance from the Torah of Chesed, let us say, or a Torah of Hesach responsibility is somewhat different from what it is to another community, whom you may respect and value, but that you stand with them. That's one kind of concern. You have to learn to relate to you superficially because you devote some resources and some energies to other values. But the problem in the modern Orthodox world is there is so much of sheer waste. To a great extent, students who are attending modern Orthodox institutions, not that they learn less Taylor because they had to divide the time of Shakespeare and chemistry. They learn less Taylor because they or the families must commit to Taylor at the Khalid counterpart, it's kind of important in their lives. They've got vacations which run from here to Adrogan. The day is short, or the week is short, or the month is short, or the year is short. And there, the situation is far bleaker than I think it needs to be. But that's the pain that it ends me. I say, I put on a paper, I'm full of envy for certain aspects of the Haredi education. Not that that's the total picture of what I would want. But you see the intention, you see where their kids come home and where the kids in the modern Orthodox school come home. This is a major, major problem to my mind, and it's a question of priorities. Now, the issue of priorities is one which everyone needs to confront in his life, by definition. Life is too short to do all the things that are worth doing you want to do. That and forever. If it's a question of priority, as the case of the Kalamun, the Rabbi of Mother Shabbos, Taylor is supposed to feel it, or as the Gemara opinion in Tanya Rabbi Gazzola, Taylor is supposed to be in Chasodia. That's one thing. But where the choices come down to Taylor and all kinds of less neutral, at times absolutely negative elements, that's the kind of choice open. This is one shortcoming. We need much more intensity, and it's intensity which I like to believe can be attained even with some breath. There's some element of intensity which you have to give up the moment you grow up. But the moment I assume that he has given up much more than it ought to, and much more than it needs to. There is a similar problem in the area of Tefillah, or I think it's been limited. On more than one occasion, I quoted the story which Rav used to tell over the room. He got the Rav succeeding. The Rav Tanya was a young man. He went to his son on the road and he wanted to go to Lyon to work on the grave. He met an old man, Andrew. Rav says, Rav Tanya succeeded to the Rav Tanya. And he asked him, Ramad did you feel? Where you had it? He said, Paul, you will love Ramad. I'm going to build Ramad. phosphorus, love, country, ethos, doesn't take your gold. You have learned to know somewhere. How does he know the call? Go to the message, Shabbat. Something in the element of passion, I spoke to him as a doctor tribe. And something that he's a little soft in the head of lacrimals. And that, neither as a symbol of ability to develop sense of passion, sensitivity, and coming to many shul of the modern class world, but the class of shul cannot bring you any of that. But the sense of passion, the sense of Ilamaki, the Kabbalah spoke about before, the Yiddish is awkward, the Yiddish, something that is lacking. Now, some of that has to do with diversity, the pace of modern life. Antoine wrote about this a long time ago, and we still have that situation. Extreme, something to either feel wild on one end, or the other is just not with abandon, with the wicked on the other end. We develop more in terms of a healthy kind of passion. And that, I think, we don't have enough. I tried, in my own way, to try to get a sense of this, but some people absorb it, but if you ask them what this community needs, it needs more depth, it needs more passion, and not just depth of passion, it's a general quality, it's characterized the community and such, but directed more to Torah, to it, to the Hashem. It's all the difference in the world between two ways of living the halakhic life. One is where you have halakha defining, pinpointing the parameters we use. That defines us as Muslims. But the values and the focus is not halakha. The values and the focus is you are of your needs, educational needs, professional needs, economic needs, and then you're observing you, so you'll never trespass, you'll never transgress, you'll never cross the border. But it's all of the truth. And it's something very, very different where halakha does not seem to define the parameters, but halakha is the heart of the matter. There's not enough of that placing the Benish Loyola and the Benish Hashem at the center of the episode of one's being within this community. This community which has done marvelous things in many ways, and I don't take that away from that. And the sheer ability to integrate as many of the community have done between living in the broader world and living in the world of Benish Hashem, in a narrow sense, it's a remarkable achievement. But we need more.
I have here, I brought to show you today, a copy of your high school yearbook. From 1948. Now I know how old you were when you graduated from high school. You told us earlier the year that you were born. You were your high school class valedictorian. You received the Tehillei HaKodesh Yisrael of Brownsville's Groner Memorial Award for Excellence in High School Scholarship. It's a very nice picture of you in the green book. And it's a very interesting write-up about you. The three sentences. This is June 1948. It says that you are the Masifta's answer to the police kids. You are going to confine yourself to the Beit Midrash. Our perambulatory encyclopedias of erudition in all fields of human endeavor keeps the teachers on their apprehensive toes. Clearly, as a young high school student, you were already very much interested in and achieved a significant level of excellence in both the Yiddish Kodesh and the Yiddish Kol. What was the source or sources of your inspiration already as a very young boy to be interested in and to excel in both of these areas?
First and foremost, it started in the beginning. I had the good fortune of going to my home, in which two values were clear. One was
those excellence.
I wasn't particularly taking a Iranian background. When an aristocracy has able to be secretary of the Yeshiva in Pels, then he's a very poor Yeshiva in Pels. She was part of an aristocratic tradition. And an aristocratic tradition is one which encourages excellence, particularly when you're dealing with the kind of intellectual aristocracy, which is meritocratic by definition. That was a powerful emphasis. And it was encouragement all along. Then, of course, the environment in kind of individuals that you're reading to is one which encouraged people to learn. It's not that the kind of one is today, the past of high school is like it now, it's no longer shared with others. These past. Today, about 50 to 1. But still, that was respected. The Yeshiva was a tremendously powerful force and a person exerted tremendous power. And that was an element as well. Although, as far as the Yidden Basmon is concerned, that was largely after the reading over here. That was the following year, I think, the Basel relationship, Basel Buffalo, we get much more seriously. But the values, I think it's important, that was there from the outset, but it was just a matter of time to be so in the wild oats and say, not to be so seriously.
The study of your writings and speeches over the last four decades reveals a striking consistency of vision in the very wide range of areas in which you have addressed. Have you fundamentally changed your mind about anything in the last 4 years?
That's a difficult question to answer, which I mean, not that like, say yes or no, but whichever answer is given, I would feel that it's a certain flaw. The answer is yes, it speaks of a certain inconsistency. The answer is no, a certain inbred conservatism. If you ask me fundamentally, without fundamental issues, I think the answer is no. In terms of emphases, nuances, priorities, I think that there certainly there have been some shifts. In fact, a single area with regard to which I found myself on a more fundamental level grappling and groping. But it's not been a shift from A to B. It's been an oscillation between A and B. It's probably the question of the respective priority and importance of the moral and religious side of the Yiddish Hashem, as opposed to the learning side. This is an imminent question within the religious life generally, within the Yeshiva world particularly. There were times, I think, earlier on when learning lumbus and regrets simply overwhelmed everything else. There was a period, unfortunately at the time, under a lot of scandals in the real world, when the finalists were saying each year, more and more convinced that ultimately the decency and integrity and sincerity in our business was shared, that was more important than all the lumbus in the world. Every so often, find myself shifting back and forth, asking about this issue of priority and centrality. What I want, I know. I want both for myself and for my community and for my people to see a profound commitment to the whole matrix, the whole complex, and see that not only in relation to independent values, but to invest it independently, but what I always try to talk about living is see the element of mutual participation. It's not just fair, I've witnessed the struggle in the street, parallel channels, with each informing the other.
But
in terms of where is one as opposed to the other, not in Shabbos, with regard to Meshach. Must say that so I'm aware of standing, somebody comes by, and one of them said, make me come to God with the truth of joy, but the Baal you do, it's your luck of you, the Baal you do, somebody else said, that the sheriff you give, make me come to God with the truth of joy, and you are going to get out of his friends, you get it hurt. There I take it, the other two views, and I find myself somewhat oscillating between the two. I think at the end of the day, I'm with the true Catholic, it's more important than others. But my heart, my passion is the longest. That's in my bones, that's in my blood. And to the extent that I can communicate it, feel that I'm doing something. Days that I don't communicate it, I'm downhearted. But again, taking a broader view, and certainly that the Mital, and this is the path of the Mystery of Yeshua, and try to be with others. The broader view has always been, and it's part of the issue at this day, it's all about the integration of the two. To integrate the two, but recognizing the terms of where the priorities need to be at a particular moment, finding the shift. And but for myself, I'm finding two things are happening. There's some shifting in terms of what the needs are on the ground, because the situation is different. Becomes a community which is totally in the Torah, you're talking about Chesed. You need to talk in the Chesed, talk about Torah. And if you're honest, we're all talking about exactly opposite what they want to hear. So it's partly that, but partly that I think my own instinct with regard to this over the years, somewhat mistaken.
We are getting late, and I have time for one last question. We began with Yeshiva and things started by Yeshiva, but I can't have a question about Yeshiva. So what are some of your fondest memories of the last few decades of Yeshiva Tarakhna?
Fondest memories of my life are probably conjunction or the whole package would be quite in deep and personal recollections. I'm very much with family. I tried to get my own family, these tailors and family. Whoever the children, some of the most fondest moments in my life that I do with my family specifically. And much of my family is part of the Shiva Tanya Sodom Commission. I think Shiva proper, I think that the overall picture probably more significant than I would say the moment here or moment there. There are certain moments which are built in to the kind of structure. The high moments, everybody's doing the shiva with certain people. Knows that I told some of the Balabatu, you come to dance in the next up, and that's the everything. Everything else is in the internet. You get paid for that. There are such high moments. There have been moments of a little tragic kind where I've been humbled by the self-sacrifice, the passing to the city which I've seen. There are people who I've gone to see. I guess this is a fond memory, but it's an overwhelming memory. People who lost sons, I met them on the model, I was totally humbled by their capacity to be the kind of the city and the cover of the Shalom. In that context. My relationship with Palestine has been a very significant factor in that context. It's not on a day-to-day basis. We're not necessarily chummy on a day-to-day basis. But there's an underlying chemistry which not always needs to be expressed. I think the broad terms are probably, I'll leave it at that. There have been occasions when I've overseen my class, it was a very far moment from said that we don't have this people to do what. But what happens is that what the very warm memories.
And there might be two
family. Of course, Donald Press has done this sort of accomplishment as such, even objective terms, but effort and buffering who able to achieve effort, make the most of themselves before themselves. You see such a problem in Caesar, but again, that could be day. It's enormous sentiment.
You spoke before at the beginning about the criteria of honesty, and I think that, like everyone's doing here, by thanking you for your honesty, for your openness, and on behalf of all of us, for the Starfish, to grant you many, many more years of good health to continue your extraordinary work on behalf of the